Great. Well, it is 12:02. Welcome everybody to the Policy Board of the Capital Region Council of Governments. It's Wednesday, May 24th. I'm calling this meeting officially to order. And the first order of business today, I'd like to open it up for public comment. I'll ask three times. Is anyone here for public comment today? We do have a strict 3-minute time limit for public comment. Anyone here? Liz Esposito. Three minutes.
Thank you. My name is Liz Esposito. I'm a new team member at Avangrid for community and government relations. So I'll be working with our towns that are served by Connecticut Natural Gas. So I just wanted to introduce myself and let you know that I'll be available for any customer service or other items that you may need in the future. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Liz. Nice to meet you. Anyone else here for public comment today? Going once, going twice. All right, the public comment section of our meeting is closed. How are we doing, Laura?
We're at 18 at the moment. So short, just a couple people. Two.
Matt, anything you want to talk about while we wait?
Sure, Mayor. What I would ask, we were going to have at the end of my report a very short presentation from Dave Murphy from Circa, just talking about our resiliency project and the hazards mitigation project that we're working on. So I think Dave just wants to chat with you all for a few minutes. Maybe we could turn to him next. Dave, sure, you ready to go?
Certainly, yep. I was all set to go later, but I can go right now.
Perfect. Thanks for being flexible.
No problem. And I've been given share permission, so let me get that up. All right. Thanks, everybody. I'll keep this pretty quick. I've got 10 slides, but I've got about 10 seconds per slide. It's going to move. So I'm here from Circa, the Connecticut Institute for Resilience and Climate Adaptation, to talk about how we are combining the Resilient Connecticut program with the Hazard Mitigation Plan update to result in a new Hazard Mitigation and Climate Adaptation Plan for the 38 towns. Exciting times. This is your planning team. I'm being assisted by Mary Buchanan and Nicole Govert from Circa and others as needed. Perhaps some of you have seen us already. We started meeting with the towns this week. This is old material. This is the region's fourth plan. All of these statements have been true for a while and are still true. The Disaster Mitigation Act is why you have a hazard mitigation plan. It's a loss reduction document, and it makes every municipality eligible for three grant programs, BRIC, FMA, and HMGP. I won't say a lot about them, but I know that some CROG towns have used these grants in the past few years. So having this plan makes you eligible. Since this is the fourth time that we're running through this, we want to keep it exciting. We have to talk about things that have happened in the past 5 years. So we'll definitely be looking at the events of 2021, and we hope that many of you have a lot to say about those floods, Ida, Henri, Fred, Elsa, et cetera. And if we can't scare you with words and diagrams, we'll scare you with pictures. This is one I took myself on the left-hand side in West Hartford Center, getting caught in one of those events. So we're going to make sure we talk about these in the plan update. But I guess the question really you might be asking at this point is, why should we change anything? Can't we just do a rinse and repeat, right? Isn't that just the easiest way to do things? No, sometimes we have to make things more fresh and exciting so they're more robust and used and don't sit on the shelf. We've got the Governor's Office for Climate Change that gave us direction a couple of years ago. There's a new deep resilience fund that's asking what's in hazard mitigation plans. And we have the Resilient Connecticut program that my agency, Circa, is expanding. So it's good timing to really freshen up this plan. I only have really one slide on Resilient Connecticut. I could talk about it for 4 hours and I won't. The first part of it was funded with federal funds, and now we're expanding it statewide using state funds. That's really good because with the federal funds, we were limited in what we could look at and what kind of projects we could develop. Now with state funds, we have complete flexibility. So for example, we met with Windsor Locks and with Granby on Monday, and they have vastly different concerns, and we are able to hear that and respond accordingly. So just in summary, we're combining these two processes, the Hazard Mitigation Plan and Resilient Connecticut, because they are very similar. They require some level of engagement, assessing vulnerabilities, identifying opportunities, and developing projects that can be funded by state and federal funding sources. And just since I haven't said it enough, I'll say it one more time. We're going to make the Hazard Mitigation Plan into a combined Hazard Mitigation and Climate Adaptation Plan. This is the schedule. It's pretty aggressive, but it needs to be because the Hazard Mitigation Plan expires sometime in the latter half of 2024. So we don't want anybody to lose eligibility for the grant programs. So we've started meeting with all of your communities, and we will continue doing that over the next few weeks. If any chief elected official wants to take part in the meeting, you are more than welcome. In small towns, that oftentimes is what happens because the chief elected official is serve some other role and you're part and parcel to the planning committee. In larger communities, that's not always the case, but everybody is welcome. And we're asking these questions: what are the flood-related challenges, the extreme heat-related challenges, and everything else that we typically talk about, power outages, et cetera. And if we have blank stares and people don't know what to say, we'll facilitate out of you ideas for this plan. So that's our job, and we're here to do it. And watch for your local meetings and watch for some public engagement. And we'll be back in the future to present to the policy board as we have updates. That's it.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Are there any questions? All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Laura tells me that we have a quorum. So let's get back to the beginning of the agenda. We'll go right in for the approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved, John Coleman.
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Lori. Are there any questions, comments on those minutes? Seeing and hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. At this time, I'm going to make a motion myself to revise our agenda. I want to move all of the action and MPO items up to the front of the agenda. Would anybody like to second that for me?
Second it, John Coleman.
Thank you. Is everybody okay with that? Are we all in favor? Please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Great. With that being said, we'll take the first action item. I'm now call on Mr. Coleman for the 2023 LOTSIP solicitation.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. These are the projects that were approved by the Transportation Committee, and they recommend same to you. I'm going to let Rob just briefly go through it so we can move this along quickly. But to get it on the table, I move approval of these project selections.
Thank you. Do I have a second for that?
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, Lori. All right, Rob, go ahead.
Sure. We had a 2023 solicitation for lots of projects that followed up with our previous to that. We had a 2022 solicitation, and in your packet, you'll see 18 projects that were selected by the Transportation Committee, totaling, $36 million. That are recommended to go into LOTSIP. We are still well below, whenever projects are going to be delivered, we're below our budgeted amount that the state sets, and we have not run into a problem with the bonding commission yet. And so we are looking to get these into the system and get them underway so they can be funded when they are done with design.
Any questions?
Excuse me, this is Peter Sousa. I have a quick question on the incentive projects.
Sure.
So how much time does a community have to initiate their other projects? Are there set milestones in order for them to receive these quote-unquote incentive projects?
The incentive projects are on the books until indefinitely. They come off of the incentive list. They're still with us, but we are not going to transmit them to DOT until those towns finish one of their other projects that are in design. They have three other projects in design right now, And therefore, when one of those is finished, we'll allow another one to move into design. It's just an incentive to keep the program moving, and so that towns don't stack up many, many projects in design. And that's, I'm not sure if that answered the question.
No, thank you, Rob. It does. Could you refresh my memory? How many, what was the dollar amount that was submitted for overall applications compared to the $36 million that is being recommended?
It was over, I believe it was just over 60 million. We are reviewing our finances this summer to see if we were planning to have another solicitation go out this fall. And we are going to review our finances over the summer and present them to the Transportation Committee in the fall to see if when we will go out for our next solicitation. But the intention was to get to an over-programmed amount where obviously, when they're delivered, we won't be over-programmed by the time they're designed, but to have enough in the hopper so that we're meeting, getting closer to our budgeted amount when these are ready to be funded.
Great. Thank you, Rob.
That's it for that, Madam Mayor. Move approval.
All right. Thanks, John. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Second one, I'll throw back to John, authorizing the Transportation Committee to act as the policy board.
This is an annual resolution that's passed every year. The Transportation Committee passed a identical resolution at its last meeting, authorizing the Transportation Committee to obviously act on behalf of the policy board while the policy board takes its necessary summer recess, this one probably being more important since it's an election year. So we will carry on the business in the interim with your superb staff sitting on the Transportation Committee, and committee has approved it, obviously recommends approval by the policy board, and I would so move.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second, Peter Souza.
Thank you, Peter. Of course, the policy board will be made aware of anything that's happening with the Transportation Committee acting in its place.
Absolutely.
Especially the chairperson. Just kidding. any other questions or comments on this? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. And the final action item we have is the approval of the budget. Mr. Hart, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And I'll try to move through this as expeditiously as we can, because we do have a couple things for the MPO that we need to vote on following. So we're very pleased to present our proposed budget for next fiscal year to the board. We did present it to the executive committee at its meeting on May 10th, and the executive committee did endorse it unanimously with no changes for your review and hopefully your approval. Before I start, I do want to thank the members of our budget team, Pauline Yoder, in particular, Tracy Malafant, and all of our directors who worked to put the budget together. I would note that CROG's budget is very different from your local municipal budgets. Our budget is an all funds budget, and you can see significant variation on a percentage basis from year to year based on the largely based on the grants that we've received and that we're working on. But our budget is balanced. It's designed to maintain current services and programs. We are looking to add some additional staff resources to implement some new initiatives, in particular, a new transportation planner and a new engineer. The budget does maintain our current due structure, which is a $3,000 base for each of the 38 towns, plus almost 69 cents per capita thereafter. Next slide, please. So other considerations, this is good news. We do see some potential for an increase in our regional services grant, which is one of our largest revenue sources. So we have included a contingency table to accommodate for this, and Pauline will talk about that in a couple minutes. And then, as I said just a moment or so ago, next year's budget does reflect an increase. It's a 12% increase over the current year, but that is due to the impact of additional grants we've received. notably the Safe Streets for All and the RPIP program. Next slide, please. So here's a brief update on the current year. And you'll see our projected budget is somewhat less than the adopted budget. And that is because we had some key staff vacancies and we weren't working on as many projects. But our projected revenue for the current year, approximately $7.6 million, most of it federal, and expenditures somewhat less than that at $7.4 million. Don't see any concerns there. Think we're in good shape for the current year. Next slide, please. And you can advance again, Laura. So here's what we're pleased to present to you for next year, a proposed budget of approximately $9.3 million. You can see the revenue slightly exceeding expenditures, the vast majority of our funds coming from the federal government, federal highways in particular. Next slide, please. Here's a little bit more of a breakdown on the revenues and expenditures. And as I've stated, the vast majority of our budget, 60% of our revenues are coming from the federal government. And then state government is the next highest category at 27%. That would be RSG and LOTSIP in particular. And our local dues only make up 8% of our revenues for next year. And that's relatively consistent with recent years. And then on the expenditure side, you'll see that a fair amount of the funds is going towards contractual services. Those are the consultants we retain to work on our projects. And then most of the rest of the money is going for salary and fringe because we are a service-based organization. Next slide, please. So here's breaking down the proposed budget a little bit further. Looking at the six large categories, everything from administration through public safety and homeland security, you'll see here that the bulk of the revenues and the spending would be dedicated towards transportation planning, approximately $4.5 million. The next highest category is public safety at $1.4 million, due largely to the grants they administer. All those grants flow through our operating budget, probably somewhat different from what you do at the local level. Next slide, please. So just touching on some of the departments in a little bit more detail, regional planning, we've got a proposed budget next year of $1.1 million. And this funds our regional planning initiatives, anything economic development related, our brownfields program, very important program, the regional plan of conservation and development, and the regional national hazard mitigation plan that Dave Murphy spoke about at the beginning of today's meeting. Next slide, please. Transportation planning, this is our largest single department and revenue source with a proposed budget of approximately $4.5 million. And you can see the expenditures, most of those going towards our studies and our projects. Next slide, please. Public safety and homeland security, a proposed budget of $1.4 million. Most of that spending is the administration and the allocation of the grants that we receive that benefit our public health districts, our public safety departments, emergency management, and other good initiatives. Next slide, please. Regional services and administration. This funding source supports staff across all departments, shared services in particular, some support for public safety, regional planning, and transportation planning. This is a bit of an overhead category, if you will, at approximately $1 million. Next slide, please. And municipal services, this entity, we got a proposed budget of $1.1 million. This group supports our purchasing council, our IT cooperative, all the service sharing work we're doing, including the Regional Performance Incentive Program, the Crumbling Foundations Testing Program, which has been very popular and very needed over the last several years. Next slide, please. So here's a quick snapshot on staffing. You'll see here we've got staffing levels by project level. The FTE count for next year is approximately 30.5. And then staffing levels by department on the right-hand side of the page, you see the numbers a little bit different on 32 because in this, we're counting actual people here. So this would include the part-time staff. The bulk of the staff in transportation planning and in administration and municipal services. Next slide, please. So I want to talk a little bit about our fund balance. We only have a couple slides left, Mayor, and I'm going to turn to Ms. Yoder, Pauline Yoder, to take care of these next couple slides. And I did want to talk a little bit about potential uses for our regional fund. Pauline?
So the highlight of this slide is the fund balance for the regional fund. We're projecting $1.9 million at the end of this fiscal year. And we are using next year, we continually fund the regional fund, but next year we're planning also on using that regional fund as match, primarily for the Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan grant and the RPIP grant that we received. You can go to the next slide. We do this every year, a five-year outlook and best case, worst case scenarios. The best case isn't as best as it looks. The worst case aren't as bad as they look because we have mitigation plans in place. And the best cases, if they were to be achieved, would be used with consultants. It's just that this doesn't necessarily reflect that, but it's a lot better than it was a few years ago. So, and then the next slide. Is the contingency table. As Matt mentioned, there is a potential for an increase in the regional services grant. And with that, what we would propose is to use some of that for the match that's taking from the regional fund instead of taking it from the regional services grant, and also adding to staff with that increase.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pauline. And just to summarize, Mayor, again, the regional fund, that balance of approximately $1.9 million, that was a very wise decision that we made some years ago to set aside funds for potential regional projects. We have drawn on that funding source before. And I think in our upcoming strategic visioning, strategic planning session we're going to have with the policy board, undoubtedly some good initiatives will come out of that we could potentially look to that funding source to utilize it for that purpose. I do think the proposed spending plan is responsible and would help us meet the needs of our members and to take on some new initiatives as we look to implement various federal and state grants. So I'll pause there, Mayor, and Pauline and I are happy to take any questions you or other board members may have.
All right, we'll open it up. Anybody have any questions?
Mayor Peter Souza has a quick question.
Got it.
Matt, is there any monies that are dedicated in FY24 to Journey Home programs or support?
I don't know that off the top of my head, Pauline. Pauline's saying negative.
Not within our budget.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Anyone else? All right. I messed up in the beginning. I didn't ask for a motion. So can I have a motion to accept the budget?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Moved by John. Do I have a second?
Second, Chris. Steve Jones.
Thanks, Chris. All those in favor of approving the budget, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed to it? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Items left are MPO items. The first one are TIP amendments is what I've got. John?
Yes, I do too. Yeah, I'm going to let, first of all, these TIP amendments, we got some late in the day, but they all benefit our region and our towns. Transportation Committee reviewed them, unanimously approved them, recommends the same to the policy board. And I would so move, and I would also ask that Rob just give a brief run through the 10 TIP amendments.
Would you like me to run through now?
Yes.
Sure. The first two TIP amendments involve Canton and West Hartford. This is what's called the CMAQ funding, which is congestion mitigation air quality. So anything that mitigates congestion that improves air quality. And we were able to get, this is from our last solicitation. We recommended these two projects, one in Canton, one in West Hartford. They both involve electric vehicles or electric vehicle infrastructure, which of course improves air quality. These are moving forward and in the TIP for approval. Number three and number four are really CONDOT focused on interstates, and there is the appropriate funding sources to fund interstate improvements. Then 5 through 10, we got late, but we're very glad we got them, because this is the Glastonbury project is the first in the PROTECT program. I think you all saw the presentation earlier about the threats of stormwater these days. This is the first. There's PROTECT formula funds that go directly to CONDOT in a formula, and then there's also discretionary funds. These are the formula funds, and these are the first ever to be spent in Connecticut on the Glastonbury culvert on Connecticut 83. So we're excited that the first ever PROTECT funding source formula funds are being spent in our region. 6 through 10 is our RAISE grant that we were awarded for New Britain and for Plainville. And we got this funding, we got awarded this funding last year. We're still working to get under contract with FHWA to get the funding flowing, but this is the first step, is to get it on the TIP. So 16.4 million of federal funds, along with almost that much of state funds, to be put on the TIP to get these projects going for multi-use trails in New Britain and Plainville, the B-line trail. And that's a little summary of the TIP amendments. If ever anyone has questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions? All right, I don't hear any. Any final comments, John?
No, Madam Chair, just move approval.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 And
aye.
Don't all say it at once now. Anybody opposed?
Was there a second right for that one?
Yes, it was Lori Spielman.
Ah, thank you.
Why not? All right. Motion carries. Our next item, motion to approve the Unified Planning Work Program.
I would so move, Madam Chair. Again, we do a multi-year program, but we also have to do an annual program. This is the program for 24-25 of all the transportation planning work that our esteemed staff carries out and we do out there. I'd just like to point out what's included in this, among other things, are the projects and studies that benefit all of us. The Capital Region Roundabout Screening Study is included in here. The traffic impact studies for Route 190 and 220 in Enfield are included. The Farmington Area Connectivity Study, the East Coast Greenbrae Gap Closure Study, which includes Simsbury, Bloomfield, Hartford, and East Hartford. The Route 20 Corridor Study in Windsor Locks, the Route 44 Corridor Study in Canton. The Regional Bicycle Pedestrian Priority Network Plan and the Regional Warehousing Land Use and Traffic Study are among the things that are included and funded as part of our unified work program that's being conducted on an ongoing basis by the staff. And I think it's just worthy to note of some of the significant activities that besides what you see on the TIP and the LOTSIP on a regular basis, are going on a regular basis by the staff. And I would so move approval of the Unified Work Program.
Got a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Who is that? I'm sorry.
Jason from East Windsor. Oh,
Jason, thank you so much. Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Motion carries. At this time, guys, I have to take off and I'm going to turn the meeting over to my dear esteemed vice chair, Lori Spielman. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Aaron.
Hi, Mayor.
Moving on to action FY24 and FY25 Connecticut DOT planning agreement. John?
Thank you, Lori. Again, this is an annual agreement that we enter into with CONDOT for both their funds and I think also the federal funds that flow through them for the planning work and the transportation work that the Capital Region carries out with federal and state funds. And the Transportation Committee, again, unanimously approved, recommend same to the Policy Board, and I would so move.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second, Peter Souza.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Aye.
The nays motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to action annual urban planning certification resolution. John?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is where we annually certify the requirements for the MPO and that we're in compliance with all the necessary rules and regulations, et cetera, to receive federal transportation funding. And of course, we do self-certify that we are perfect in all of those records. The Transportation Committee has approved this motion, recommends same to the Policy Board acting as the MPO, and I would so move.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor, and do we have a second?
Second, Chris Edge.
Okay, thanks, Chris. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to staff reports, Matt.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'll move through this expeditiously so we can get to our presentation today. We did, the full report is loaded on our website and in the information you received, so you can review it at your convenience. So starting off under the Executive Director section, very excited about our upcoming annual meeting, which we're gonna hold Thursday, June 15th from 1:30 to 5 at the Riverfront Recapture Boathouse here in Hartford. Michelle McCabe, the Executive Director for Connecticut Main Street Center. She's going to be our keynote speaker. She's going to talk about their work to inspire downtowns across our state. We're mixing it up a little bit here. We're going to have a social hour following the keynote and the presentations. You all should have received an invitation and hoping all or many of you can come. We're looking forward to a good event there. Another event looking forward to would be our strategic visioning session with the full Policy Board is invited. You know, we understand you've got other demands on your time, but we're hoping to get a good cross section of the board to attend a special meeting on the morning of June 12th. And Mayor Stewart will host this session at New Britain City Hall. And we're going to meet from 9 to 11:30 roughly. And Grossman Solutions will serve as our facilitators. This will be a chance for us to talk about the good work we do and what we'd like to tackle in the future. And we're going to be looking for input from you, our board, in terms of how we set those priorities for the next 3 to 5 years. Moving on, a couple things under the bipartisan infrastructure law. You're probably all aware of the fact that the DOT has issued, they are taking applications now under round two of the Safe Streets for All program. And we understand roughly 5 or 6 of our towns are interested in pursuing grants under this round. And we're happy to assist them in putting together good competitive applications. Also wanted to note that we have a new service available. We've discussed this with the Transportation Committee. If you have a project in your capital budget, or if you have a project in mind, an infrastructure project in mind that you think might qualify for federal funding, but you're not sure, we'd like you to come to us with your idea, and we will take a look at all the available grant funding resources to see if something matches up, if you have a competitive project, if not, what you might need to do to make your project more competitive. And if you're interested in that service, only a couple of towns have taken us up on it so far, would encourage you to reach out to Elizabeth Sanderson from our team. And Elizabeth, I'll ask you to put your email in the chat and really encouraging our towns to take advantage of that opportunity. Moving on to municipal services, we have rolled out what we're calling our CROG What, CROG Who, CROG Why social media campaign. That's really designed to better inform the public about the good work we do. You know, many of you had commented that CROG needs to work to expand its awareness from the public at large. So this is a campaign in an effort to do that. I want to thank Aaliyah Miller for taking the lead. Also wanted to let you know that we did recently convene a meeting of the Central Connecticut Solid Waste Authority. Recall the solid waste management study we recently presented. We presented that again to the member towns. We've got 14 member towns. I think the report, including many of you, I believe the report was very well received, and CSWA will be meeting on a regular basis now to move forward with the study recommendations. I wanted to touch on our regional performance incentive program, the shared building official. We're actually recruiting right now for part-time building officials. We're looking for certified people who can work in that program. The shared assessment initiative, we are struggling a little bit to get that one off the ground. Want to commend the town of Manchester for stepping up to take the lead on that, and we're looking for some additional partners there. Our shared animal control initiative, we've got a small group of towns that are talking, and it looks like we've got some good potential there. Moving on to transportation planning, we did submit the finalized 2023 through 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan to state and federal agencies for approval, and we're looking forward to receiving their approval. It's a very important plan that we work from. Moving on to public safety, I did want to note that I recently attended a SWAT training event. There were approximately 160 police officers and other public safety personnel in attendance. We held this at the Post Academy. I want to thank Cheryl Assis and Bill Perkins from our team, as well as all the participants. I was really, really impressed by the quality of the training that was conducted and the dedication from all the officers who participated in that very, very important exercise. Moving on and wrapping up with regional planning and development, we have initiated our update of our regional plan of conservation and development. We are going to be hosting a handful of focus groups to talk about housing, environment, and governance. And I am going to invite all of the policy board members to participate in that governance conversation if you wish to do so. And John Alcesser, our good colleague from Coventry, has agreed to facilitate that session. So expect to get an invitation from me on that in the near future. That completes my report for today. Ms. Spielman, Laurie, happy to take any questions that you or other members may have. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Matt? Okay, moving on. We already talked to David, right?
We did.
Okay, so we can move on to that legislative update. Is Kathy here?
I am. How are you? 2 weeks left to session from today, which it has not been an overly busy or long sessions. There is a, I don't want to say tentative agreement on the budget, but they're very close. It, as of right now, is going to be a bipartisan budget. The Republican leaders in the House have said publicly that they were very happy to have been included, and their requests and suggestions have been taken into account. And as of right now, the assumption is it should be a relatively easy budget to pass. The speaker mentioned hoping to do it by mid next week. And in his pre-session presser this morning, he mentioned it again, so it sounds like it's all moving along fairly smoothly right now. What is happening is the creation of the very large, they refer to as aircraft carrier bills, is happening now. They're coming out as strike oil amendments, and some of these bills are 60, 70, even more pages. So they're very large. I was told by the chair of two committees that is what they're pretty much all doing right now to combine everything that's been agreed to. One piece of legislation that I think y'all were interested in, and it came up at the transportation meeting the other day, is the Vision Zero bill that ran in the House last night. It probably up to now was the longest talking bill. They did make a few changes to the original language, not a lot. They removed the open container section and they removed the helmet law piece of it. Few other pieces. As it directly relates to municipalities, the red light program they're instituting, and they made it very, very clear that it is not a mandate and it would be a municipality offering to start or wanting to start in certain areas a red light program. It has been left, and I know they went back and forth on it, but it has been left that it will be the town who will issue the citations and the town that will manage the checking out of the recordings. So that is leaving some responsibility on the towns, but it's also my understanding that the town the funds from the fines will stay with the town. So I guess that's a little bit of an encouragement to consider it. Other than that, I don't know if you have any questions on anything specific. The big DOT bill, DMV, the big agency bills haven't come up yet.
Any questions for Kathy?
Lori, this is Matt. I have a quick question. Kathy, anything happened with the EPR for tires bill? Did that?
Oh, actually, yes.
Instead of that yesterday, right?
They actually, I just had a text that they called it, and I don't know if it's passed yet, but they called it in the House just a little while ago.
So Kathy, this is Mike Rell.
Yes.
Yeah, they're taking it up right now in the House.
Right. And there are a few amendments. Last time I looked, all by the House chair of the committee, and that had to do with a definition of the recycling of it.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Mayor Mike.
Okay. Moving on to Data Heaven presentation, Matt Hart.
Thank you, Lori. Very pleased to introduce our colleagues from Data Haven here with us today. We have Kelly, I believe it's Davia. I apologize, Kelly, if I'm not pronouncing your last name correctly, as well as my colleague, Mark Abraham. I believe he's in attendance as well. Data Haven does a lot of great work in the data space. We partnered with them in the past on several initiatives, and we're certainly looking to do more in the future. And their information is very important to us for a variety of purposes, including how, you know, we best serve the needs of our community, prepare good quality grant applications for federal and state funding, any number of ways in which we look to partner together. Kelly and Mark, happy to turn the floor over to you and welcome. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Matt. I'll speak for a minute and then turn it over to Kelly. Good afternoon to all the distinguished mayors and honorable members of the policy board. We'd like to first extend our appreciation to CROG for inviting us to present. This is the second edition of the Greater Hartford Community Wellbeing Index that we presented. And the link to the report is in the agenda, as well as on our website, ctdatahaven.org. You can go to the next slide. So this report, we've sent out printed copies, like several hundreds of printed copies, to public libraries, to city staff, nonprofits. I think some of you have received copies, and also thousands of electronic copies have been distributed by the partners. So it is a source that's widely used. It covers many topics, as you can see in that sort of this is table of contents here. There's information on transportation, housing, health, civic life. So Kelly will talk about some of the specific findings in a minute. Next slide. And the data from the report, we've seen it used in grant applications, as Matt mentioned, for I think tens of millions of dollars now just in the past few years for Connecticut communities. One component of the index report is a large statewide survey that about 80 public and private partners support, including CROG. So we're thankful to, in the Hartford region, the United Way, the Hartford Foundation, the Hartford Healthcare Hospitals, Trinity College, and others, and many of the towns as well for supporting the data collection, which is used in community health assessments, but also other projects and reports. Next slide. For the 2023 reports, we have specific documents or large, you know, books basically for the CROG region, but also for New Haven and Fairfield County areas. Next slide. And we also have the town equity reports, which are the most popular resource we publish. That is, there's actually a report that's similar topics for each of the 169 towns in the state. So even if you're in a smaller town, if you go to this link on our website, you can get a report specific to your town. And we have an update of those coming out soon as well. Next slide. And I'll turn it over to Kelly from here. Thank you.
All right. So I'm going to cover just a few of the highlights from this current report. In the time since the last report, you know, the 2020 census data came out, so we were able to look at some population counts and household counts, changes over time as well. So the state and Greater Hartford are becoming increasingly diverse. Younger generations are more likely to identify as non-white, with Latinos being the fastest growing racial ethnic group since 1980. In the region in Greater Hartford, 15% of the population is foreign born, and a half of those immigrants who came in since 2010 are from Asia. There's also another sizable, you know, population from Latin America. Sorry, was there a question? Okay. So also looking at population and household growth, the population is more or less stagnant statewide as well, growing by only 0.2% since 2010, but total households grew by 7%, meaning there's more single person households, and those households are more likely to be renters. Non-family households are growing at the fastest clip, both in Greater Hartford and statewide. One of the things that we added in this report is looking at income and racial segregation. So in a given neighborhood, so in a census tract, what percent of the population is, or you know, what's the share of the population by race, ethnicity, and what's the share of the population by income distribution? So what we found is that in Greater Hartford, the average white resident lives in a neighborhood where 75% of their neighbors are white. Residents of color tend to live in far more diverse neighborhoods. And only 5% of regional of residents in the Greater Hartford region live in both high income and high racial diversity neighborhoods. There's a lot of benefits, obviously, to having less economic and racial segregation in neighborhoods in terms of resource allocation, but also just like the experiences of individuals growing up and living in those areas tends to kind of diminish some structural segregation and structural racism that people are experiencing. Some things that we kind of always look at in these reports, and here's an update on those, are family resources and other financial well-being indicators. So looking at limited car access, this is individuals who are, if they need a car, they're able to get to that car or access a car if they need it. 10% of residents or of adults in Greater Hartford lack access to a car when they need it. Broadband internet is something that also became, you know, more critical during the pandemic with things like Zoom school and working remotely. So we wanted to look at households who earn less than $50,000 a year who lack broadband internet, and that's about 30% in the Greater Hartford region. This rate kind of varies from town to town, and you know, there's kind of an infrastructure element to that, but by and large, some of this access has to do with income and just the cost of internet access. Childcare is another kind of family resource metric that we like to look at. For example, having access to childcare can increase economic opportunity for parents, but we know that there is not enough childcare seats statewide and in Greater Hartford. So this measure is looking at just the share of the child population up to age 5 and the number of available seats in the region. This doesn't necessarily mean that those seats are located where they need to be or that they are appropriate for the child's age. For example, a 0 to 3 year old daycare situation is a little bit different from a 3 to 5 year old daycare situation, but nevertheless, only about 40% of children in the region would be covered by childcare slots. A measure called Just Getting By Financially. So one of the questions that we ask in our survey is how people would kind of self-assess or rate their current financial situation. And 25% of adults in Greater Hartford are saying that they're just getting by financially or worse. So this is something that we saw improve just a little bit during the pandemic with some federal assistance, and that number has since gone back up, but it's very similar to the statewide rate, 26%. Similarly, negative net worth is another measure that we look at, and 15% of the adults in Greater Hartford state that they have negative net worth. Underemployment is something that has changed a little bit over time, obviously, with a big unemployment spike during the pandemic. But this measure looks at people who are unemployed and want to work, and people who are working part-time, for example, and they want more hours or they want to be working full-time. And that figure is still about 17% in Greater Hartford. And finally, difficulty paying for food. So this is a question we ask if somebody's had just difficulty paying for food for their families in the past year, and 10% of respondents in Greater Hartford said yes. I want to reiterate that this survey was run in 2021. So this following slide will kind of show the situation since then. So federal pandemic relief programs actually really, really helped families pay for food or be more able to pay for food through the expansion and SNAP benefits and things like that. But once those programs sunset, the rates of food insecurity spiked beyond pre-pandemic levels. And that's compounded with just inflation over time. So between 2021 and 2022, groceries cost an average of 13% more. It being halfway through 2023, that number is probably even higher. But food insecurity has been a concern for a long time, but it's a growing critical concern for low-income families, families with kids, seniors, residents of color. This is a major issue. Housing insecurity, as we all know, is another major issue kind of nationwide. Connecticut is not exempt from that. 57,000 households in Greater Hartford pay at least 50% of their income towards housing costs, and 33,000 of those are renters. So that's 1 in 4 renters in Greater Hartford who are putting 50% of their pay towards housing costs. 8,000 as well in Hartford alone. A lot of this has to do with just basic supply and demand, that there's just not enough housing being built for the demand that there is, but also just the simple increase in cost of housing. And the next slide, I'll show you a graphic of that. But because of that, because of slow housing construction, as well as individuals being unable to afford or not want certain housing that is available, perhaps in suburbs if they want to live in cities, or a house is too big and they want something smaller, homeownership has dropped from 68 to 65% in the past 10 years. A sizable amount of adults in Connecticut fear that eviction or foreclosure is imminent. We saw during the eviction moratorium that there was a sizable drop in the number of evictions over time, but that number has also increased to pre-pandemic levels. In addition to kind of official eviction or foreclosure, use eviction as an example, informal eviction, a landlord will take a tenant to court. There's also informal eviction where landlords will simply price an individual out of an apartment. Those are all kind of issues that people are dealing with, in addition to already paying huge chunks of their income towards housing costs. And obviously this affects different populations more than others. Renters are often bear the brunt of massive fluctuations in costs of housing. Younger individuals, people of color, low-income householders, seniors, people on fixed incomes, things like that, are kind of experiencing this in a more acute way than others. So I'll show this next slide. The average rent in Greater Hartford increased by 25% in just 4 years. But to put that in perspective, looking at the time between 2018 and 2020, region-wide, Hartford is this orange bar, region-wide rent and home prices would increase by 4 or 5% per year. But in the period 2020 to 2022, that spiked. So an increase of more than 30% in home costs, home prices, and 20% in rent. And while those values are, a little bit better than the national average, that's still just an enormous increase in just a couple of years. you know, compounded with the fact that a lot of people had lost jobs and therefore lost income, or if they didn't lose a job, wages have mostly stagnated since then. So this is, you know, facilitating that metric that people are paying, you know, not just 30% of their income towards housing costs, but now, you know, 50% or more. So like I mentioned, unemployment obviously spiked during the pandemic and is now kind of receding. It's right now about hovering around pre-pandemic levels, 2018 levels, but the distribution of employment is a little bit different than it used to be. So overall in the region, this is in Hartford and Collin counties, 5% of jobs were lost between 2020 and 2022. I know this information is a little bit dated now that we're in 2023, but the overall trend here is that, you know, some sectors that lost jobs are growing and some are not. For example, accommodation, hospitality, those jobs in numbers are increasing now, but, you know, there's not as many finance and insurance jobs growing at this point. So some of these industries are going to be more affected in the long term than others. Finally, so overdose is something that we always kind of track. 2021 was an extremely fatal year for overdoses in Greater Hartford and statewide, nationwide. In Greater Hartford area in particular, fentanyl is present in about 90% of fatal overdoses. And a lot of this is without the knowledge of the consumer, right? So fentanyl is being added to the drug supply, and people who are not anticipating, you know, purchasing or taking fentanyl are inadvertently overdosing at much higher rates than others. So, you know, in 2012, fentanyl was almost non-existent in the drug supply. Fewer than 5% of overdoses had fentanyl in it. So this is obviously a huge emerging concern, no longer affecting just one population or another. This is no longer an urban or a rural problem or a Black, white, Latino problem. This is, you know, opioids in particular are affecting all facets of life, in especially in New England. So adding on to some of the new information that we included in this report, we wanted to look at a couple of environmental metrics and public safety metrics. So we analyzed some temperature data and discovered that there was an increase of 1 degree Fahrenheit in average temperatures in Hartford County. And not only did the temperature of the average heat wave — a heat wave is, you know, it has to be more than 90 degrees for more than one day — the average temperature of heat waves increased and the number of heat waves increased. So there are just more and hotter days in the community right now. So also, you know, looking at public safety, we asked residents of the 5 largest cities in the state opinions on gun violence, and more than half of the residents or the adults in Hartford said they were afraid of gun violence, and 1 in 5 of them had witnessed a shooting in the past year. So I want to also add that, like, some of you may be aware that we released a health equity report in 2020. I'm in the process of updating that, and we're going to include a little bit more information on gun violence and you know, gun-related fatalities in that report. So I think it's a bit more complicated than just this one bullet point is alluding to, but just be on the lookout for that. And then finally, to round up public safety, we looked at vehicle-related collisions and the effects on cyclists and pedestrians. And more than 80% of vehicle-related collisions with cyclists and pedestrians in Greater Hartford resulted in injury or fatality. So obviously, those are unnecessary deaths that can, you know, we've got the capacity to help alleviate in the region. Further looking at police interactions, we were interested to think about, in proportion to the share of the population, how many Black, white, Latino drivers are being stopped, and how many of those stops are leading to searches. And so what we're seeing is that Black residents make up an enormous share of both stops and searches in relation to the share of the population in Greater Hartford. But interestingly, it's the white drivers who, once they are searched, that contraband is most likely found. So this is kind of backing up a statistic. You know, we asked in a survey if adults had been unfairly treated by police. 24% of Black adults in the region, 21% of Latino adults say they had been. So this is just kind of another measure underscoring that that phenomenon. So that was just a really high level overview of the information in the reports. There's obviously a lot more in there. If you would like to access them, they're available online. You can contact us for hard copies of them, and we'll take any questions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Kelly?
Madam Chair, this is Matt. I can ask one to get the ball rolling. So Kelly and Mark, thank you so much for that very informative presentation. I'm sure the index will prove to be a useful tool for all of us. Could you elaborate on maybe the connection between workforce needs? You know, we continue to hear from our larger employers, you know, their need for quality applicants, and then some of the other findings from the well-being index. You seeing any good connections there, that disparity?
There's a few things kind of going on, and I actually presented at Scrog earlier this morning, where the conversation kind of went into looking at the outcomes for current K-12 students. So things like SBAC pass rates and graduation rates and whether or not those are improving or not improving. I mean, obviously we saw a dip during the pandemic with Zoom school just being a massive thing to adjust to. So on the one hand, we kind of don't know as far as pipeline, like what's really going to happen with some of the students, some of the student outcomes for graduates, you know, in the next few years. But in terms of, you know, available jobs and growing jobs in the region, I think that, you know, the recovery, economic recovery has been kind of focused in reopening local businesses, many of which are in accommodation or food service or hospitality, things like that. But we are seeing a decline, you know, in Greater Hartford and in Fairfield County and things like insurance, finance, you know, jobs that are more white collar. So I'm not sure, you know, what that's going to look like in the long term with the workforce that's available in the region and the jobs that are available in the region.
Thank you, Kelly.
Does anybody have anything else for Kelly? If not, we'll move on to information, opportunity, and resource items. Correspondence, handouts, Matt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just some announcements of some upcoming meetings. I spoke to two of them earlier, and then want to highlight that we did attach our newsletter, The Croc Connection. If you haven't had a chance to read one of the newsletters before, really would encourage you to do so, and want to thank Aaliyah Miller for her great work on that. Each and every month. And thank our colleagues from Data Haven for presenting today. We don't have any other business from staff today, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We have the dates, correspondence, and any other business? If not, could I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Madam Chair.
And a second?
Second, Steve Jones.
Okay, thank you, Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. See you soon.